This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, Joe. 560 The Joe Radio Rewind. Running back some of the best you've heard here on 560 over the past 24 hours. Where you at? It's Dan Day on a Monday, but maybe not the worst Monday. We get to spend it together, and tonight I'm going to watch that Knicks-Nets game. My downstairs neighbor Joe, he lived in New York City for a long time, so got a little vested interest in that. Go over to Nathan's house, bring some Yingling beer. Three of us, we just whoop it up, so see how that goes tonight. Over the next hour, we're going to have a lot of fun, though. Going to check in with the Joe Rose Show. They're talking NFL with Kyle Krabs. Greeny talking to my guy, Sean Payton. A lot going on in New Orleans. Zion Williamson, the new king of New Orleans, now that Drew Brees no longer playing football, but he's still the king of New Orleans also. And then Hawk and Crowder get your NBA and MVP updates from Brian Geltzeiler. Right now, let me give you some updates with the headlines. The Heat beat the Magic for the second time in a week yesterday, 102-97. Butler went 29-9-7. Next up for Miami is the Cavs tomorrow at 8. The Panthers won 3 in a row over the weekend, downing the Hawks 4-2. The two play again tonight at 7. The Dolphins and Texans have agreed to trade linebacker Shaq Lawson and Benedrick McKinney. The trade is not official until Wednesday. Highly recruited freshman Earl Timberlake will transfer from the Canes men's basketball team. The forward played 7 games last season after dealing with injuries. The U's men's baseball team took 2 of 2 from Wake Forest this past weekend for their 5th straight win. Yesterday's game was canceled due to Wake not having enough available pitchers. David Beckham has been working out with Inter Miami during their first week of practice. Beckham, of course, will not play, but will remain president of the team, who begin their season April 18th against the LA Galaxy. Saints quarterback Drew Brees has officially retired. The Texas native plans to continue to live in New Orleans and will work as a studio analyst for NBC. The NCAA basketball tournament begins Thursday in Indianapolis. Top seeds include Gonzaga, Baylor, Illinois, and Michigan. You know it's Monday. You've earned it. Let's step into the day spa. The Sierra Nevada Brewery in California broke a world record when they catapulted a keg of beer 438 feet. Thanks for wasting beer. A Missouri man reeled in a rare 112-pound black carp. Master baiter. A woman went online to call out her date for only buying her water while they went on a dinner date. Come on, dude. Buy those drinks. It may pay off in the end. A French woman is claiming not only is she in a relationship with a roller coaster, but also has had children with the ride. My hot mess of the day. Waking up in the morning, you may be a hot mess, but you can get some sanity and get some control in your life by listening to The Joe Rose Show. Weekdays from 6 to 10. Earlier, got a handle on the NFL with Kyle Krabs talking about the Dolphins' new linebacker and some future moves the team might make and some of the best fit players for Miami.
Kyle, good morning. We got an inside linebacker, but we had to give up Shaq Lawson for it. What'd you think of that trade with Houston?
Hey, good morning, guys. the swap for Bernard McKinney is an interesting one. I think you look at Shaq and obviously signing the 3-year, $30 million contract that Miami brought him in on last year. And I appreciate the break even as far as for cap ramification purposes go. And I do think when healthy, Bernard McKinney plays his position at a higher level than what Shaq Lawson plays his respective position. Shaq just, you can make the argument, plays a more high impact position. But Miami's been kind of searching to get this inside linebacker thing figured out. Under the Flores era, it was Raekwon McMillan, and he played 46% of the snaps in 2019. And last year, Elandon Robertson, granted, he got hurt and missed the end of the season, but he only played 39% of the snaps. So Miami has been looking for a thumper in between the tackles in the run game who they can play more than just 40 to 45% of the snaps. And Bernard McKinney, at 260 pounds, he can be that player because he brings you more value on third down. So from that perspective, I really like this addition.
Hey, the run defense is obviously kind of a priority with everything else. We get talking about so many different areas, people forget that run defense still got to get better. Those numbers still got to get better. Do you see us going out and getting another defensive tackle, or do you think they're pretty happy with the three young guys that they have?
I would be happy with the three young guys that you have, but I think you just need bodies to be able to stay fresh, right? So I think they will find somebody, whether it is Devon Godshall, who they have the familiarity with. You look across the free agent market for interior defensive linemen this year, and there's a lot of players who can bring similar things to what Devon can, which is really good early down play and short yardage play, but not a guy who's going to make a lot of splash plays in the backfield. You look at tackles for loss and sack production, and none of those things really jump out at Devon Godshall. Because the market's so oversaturated with those kinds of guys, Devon may find he doesn't have the market that he's hoping for. And if that's the case, you know, I do think Miami does need another rotational guy. And it makes me like to think that they'll have a reasonable chance to re-sign him to be part of the rotation. Devon's not going to get the contract that maybe he was hoping for. But I definitely think they need another body of some kind.
Are you more for getting that pass rusher through this free agent group of guys, whether Reddick, Floyd, Lawson, all those kind of guys, who would you rather do it in the draft, or you think they might even try to do it with one of their top picks and a veteran guy?
The downside to doing it with a free agent signing is that guy's probably going to get paid, like really good money. So for the Dolphins, they last offseason prioritized adding defensive players, and it paid huge dividends for the team. And it just, you would think or you would hope that they would have some resources available to them to make a similar kind of investment on the offensive side of the football. So that's the only reason I'd be leery of targeting one of these free agent edge guys. I think that from an economic standpoint, it's a much more attractive option to say, hey, it's a really good pass rusher class as far as the edge group goes. If you've got top 50 picks, we've got four of them in the top 50. But that's a big role then that you're putting your expectations on as a player. So you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. I think they'll probably sign somebody this week, and then it'll give them the flexibility where if the board falls favorably to them in April, they can just make that pick and say, hey, we're picking good football players and the best players available.
A position that we bring up all the time here on the show, the center position with Ted Karras, is it worth trying to bring him back? Is it worth looking around? Is there someone in the draft they could actually target? Like, that position not talked about a lot, yet very important when it comes to that offensive line. What do you think the Dolphins do there?
Yeah, I've seen reports that they're interested in bringing back Teddy for the right price, and I thought Teddy was fine. I thought he settled into the starting center role reasonably well enough, and you could do a whole lot worse. And Miami in recent years has seen a whole lot worse as far as their center play and then into your offensive line play than what Karras brought. The question is, Teddy came down to Miami and took a lesser deal than what he was offered in New England so that he could prove he could be a starting center. And he's done that. So now what is he going to look for from a market perspective? And there's four or five starting caliber centers on the free agent market. So if Ted puts his foot down or Ted believes his value is something that Miami disagrees with, the good news is they'll have other options. But yeah, this is a really good center group in the draft as well. You look at Landon Dickerson from Alabama, who I think from a size and physicality profile really fits what the Dolphins are trying to build along the offensive line. He has a knee injury and might not be available for the start of the season. And durability in general is a big question mark for him. And The other one is Creed Humphrey from Oklahoma, who's had a great pro day. He's really athletic. He played in the spread system. He's a left-handed snapper. So there's of course, those who will point to Tua Tagovailoa and say, hey, perfect. We got a left-handed center for a left-handed quarterback. What more could you ask for? So both of those guys are going to be probably top 50, top 64 caliber selections in the draft as well. So, again, Miami's going to have options. It's just how do you want to pigeonhole yourself going into the draft knowing you need to come out with X, Y, and Z?
All right. Now, you know we have to have Brian Flores looking at that that roster for the New England Patriots and their free agents. Which one are we going to grab? Give me one you like. We got to have a Patriot. Come on.
I like their two defensive linemen, to be completely honest. Adam Butler is one that stands out. Not maybe the splashiest of signings, but we were just talking about how they'll probably look for another body. I think that's probably the safest bet. If we don't bring back Ted Karras, you know, I wouldn't rule out David Andrews. If Miami's going to say, hey, if Ted wants more money than what we're comfortable signing, we might as well take that and sign David Andrews, who started over Ted Karras in New England for all those years. So I would look to the trenches would be my place where I would peg it. Either Adam Butler would be one, or David Andrews on the offensive line.
You know, it wasn't a huge deal, but what'd you think of the punting last year? It was interesting because it looks like we're going to have a new punter. What were your thoughts?
I ironically enough thought, or at least for the first two-thirds or three-quarters of the season, that Matt Hawk had his best year punting, and it kind of fell apart on him down the stretch.
Yes, it did. Yep.
And that's kind of been the book on Hawk, right? There's such a consistency issue. In the past, it had been game to game and month to month, and now it was kind of quarter of the season to quarter of the season. So I understand why a team like Miami, who won football games because of special teams, or in large part because of special teams, right? We think about the Rams' contributions in special teams with setting them up on the short field, the block punt that they had, and Jakeem Grant with a punt return touchdown this past year. So special teams was such a core bit of what they did as a team, and to not be able to trust your punter to flip the field when you needed them to flip the field, yeah, I'd make a change too. And it's just kind of been year over year, that inconsistency has been too much at this point to ignore.
All right, so we're looking at free agency, and we got the draft going to follow it up here. Give me. I just want to hear in your order the top three needs on this football team as we get set, and some of it will be taken care of with Band-Aids and free agency, and some will be with all these high picks through the draft. Give them to me.
I would look at the wide receiver position is probably the most pressing need. It's not the most high-value position that the Dolphins need, but it's the most pressing need on the roster. I would say the pass rusher, outside pass rusher, is number two. And because of positional value, I will put running back at number three. Now, Myles Gaskin had almost 100 yards of all-purpose yardage per game in the games that he played. I think he finished with like 94 yards per game in 10 games or something like that of all-purpose yards. So he's a productive back, and it just really seems like from all indications and reports that Miami's really going to intently be in the running here. So I know some people may hear running backs as top three need and want them to go a different direction with a more high-impact position. But you know, they also ran a lot of their offense, whether it was passing game, screen game, running game, through the back. That player, if you want to get a featured player, if you're the Dolphins, that player's going to touch the ball if he stays healthy 250, 300 times this upcoming season. So that's a big chunk of your offense. So that's why I put it as a primary need.
No, I'm with you, man, especially after the deal was just made. Those are three. I totally agree, and I am dying to see what's going to happen, especially if the deal in Houston doesn't happen at quarterback and you use all those draft picks. I think we spread it throughout and hit all three of those areas with three of the top four picks that you're talking about, running back, wide receiver, and also pass rusher on the outside. Of all those guys out there right now, if you had to pick a guy, Reddick, Floyd, Lawson, all the different guys, Ngakoue, I don't know if you're an Ngakoue guy or not, who would you take? Which guy, if you had to take one, whether a guy's been injured and coming off an injury, is a one-hit wonder, had one great year, I'm just curious. Outside linebacker or true defensive end, just a pass rusher.
This question's a bit of a catch-22 because the guy who I think fits the Dolphins stylistically the best isn't necessarily the guy that I would peg to take in free. I think Matt Judon of Baltimore really fits from a athletic profile, a style of play. He's another one of these big 6'5", 6'6", 270-pound, really long arms. He was a plus athlete coming out. He's not the most bendy, but that's, you know, a lot of people like guys who can just bend and win, reducing their inside shoulder off the edge. And Miami really hasn't gone after those guys. When you look at Emmanuel Ogba, he's not been that kind of pass rusher. You look at Shaq Lawson, and they signed him to a $10 million deal before they, or per season before they traded him. He's not that kind of guy either. So if they want a guy fits the MO of what they've gone after in the past, I like Matt Judon, and he was really productive in Baltimore's defense as an outside linebacker, hybrid edge player, because they blitz so frequently and manufactured some free runs off the edge, and he's a really, really plus run defender. So I take all those variables, and I think that fits the puzzle for Miami. But if it were me, I want the twitch that Carl Lawson can bring off the edge. You know, his pressure production and ability to generate heat on opposing quarterbacks is disruptive. And I think as Miami, if they look to assemble a team that's capable of catching the Buffalo Bills, I think they need a couple of guys that can win some one-on-ones on the edge in the pass rush, so they don't have to send the blitz, because Josh Allen has killed them, whether they drop everybody or they send people in blitz. But if you're going to send six and he's going to break three tackles and still throw, then you might as well just flood coverages against that guy. So that's the big conflict for the Dolphins. And I think some more organic pass rush guys who can win when you send four is a recipe that can help the Dolphins be better against Buffalo.
Kyle, what if a certain outside linebacker pass rusher from Denver gets cut, Von Miller, and the money's right? Would he fit in this defense?
I think he would fit as far as he's versatile. He could play with his hand in the dirt. We're assuming he's still got plenty left in the tank because he's such a gifted player. It would just kind of break all the trends for Miami, right? As far as what they target with age, and that it seems to be such a big staple, but that's inevitably going to be part of the maturation process of this team as it continues to rebuild. You're going to have to, at some point, if you want to contend to win a Super Bowl, get away from signing guys who are coming off their first contracts and going into second contracts, and sign a couple guys who are a little bit longer in the tooth because they can help push you over the top.
Yeah, we're not looking for any more guys to come down and get some extra vacation money and more 401k money. No, we've had those guys. You're right. Kyle, great having you, man. Always appreciate it. Thank you so much. You get up early, too,
man. Thanks for having
me, guys. I like that. Thank you, man.
Yep. Hey, it's draft season. The grind never stops.
That's never right.
Joe Rose, that guy, he is just as fun off the air as he is on the air. Be sure to tune in and hear all of his perspective on all sports, not just football, not just catching Dan Marino's first touchdown pass as a Dolphin. You know, stuff like that. Greeny, he knows everybody.
It came down between two teams, Miami and us, and you know, I think he felt more comfortable or more confident that obviously the commitment we were making both financially and as well.
The coach, Sean Payton, talking with the Greeny next here on 560 The Joe Radio Rewind. 560 The Joe Radio Rewind, running back some of the best you've heard here on 560 over the past 24 hours. How do you do? I am Dan Day. Kind of a bittersweet weekend for me. The Pelicans did win. Zion Williamson is the real deal. But Drew Brees retired. So the King of New Orleans abdicating his throne to Zion Williamson. So Greeny right now, touching base with Sean Payton, coach of the Saints, talking about memories of signing and coaching Drew Brees and Saints' plan going forward.
Breaking news right now. ESPN's Adam Schefter is reporting. 15 years to the day when he signed with New Orleans Saints, Drew Brees is announcing his retirement.
One of the greatest of all time.
A little question of that. Greeny, as we continue here, and we are delighted to welcome in the man who was the coach with Drew in New Orleans all of those years and had all of that success together. Sean Payton is with me here on ESPN Radio. Sean, thanks a million for doing this. How are you today?
I'm doing good, Mike. How are you?
Well, I'm terrific. And I want, before we look at anything that has happened recently, let's go all the way back and let's make sure that we paint an appropriate picture of where it began. So it's 2006. We're a year removed from the tragedies of Hurricane Katrina. A new coach and a new quarterback come to New Orleans for a fresh beginning. What do you remember about that?
Yeah, look, it's pretty clear still, and it doesn't seem that long ago, but I'd gotten here probably January 06, and right away began filling out the staff, looking closely at the current roster, and then evaluating the quarterbacks in that year's draft were, you know, it was Cutler, Young, Leinart, and it was the Reggie Bush draft. We were at the combine, and I can remember it was the day the offensive linemen were working out when when we had heard that San Diego had released Drew, we knew he had a significant injury. You know, we began doing our research at that point. It came down between two teams, Miami and us, and you know, I think he felt more comfortable or more confident that obviously the commitment we were making both financially and as well, you know, at that time, there was so much still going on relative to Katrina that, you know, we're trying to put our best foot forward and celebrate any type of signing, any type of, and that's the significant of him, the significance of him signing obviously was forever going to change the organization. And then shortly thereafter, we used the second pick of the draft with Reggie Bush. We had a real good draft that year. It was Bush, it was Roman Harper, Jari Evans, Colston, Streeth. That was as clear today as looking back on it. And I can recall even when Mickey and I flew up to pick up Drew and his wife, they were in Birmingham rehabbing with Dr. Andrews, and he was still in a sling. And to some degree, we were betting on the makeup that we knew he was going to, you know, work his tail off. There had not been a quarterback have this injury. There was no really study of someone who had this injury and then later played, but it began in 06.
And the rest is history. I mean, literally, that's an overused phrase, but in this case, it really is appropriate. Let's focus first on the football piece of it. When did you start to realize that the chemistry was there? Because it's one thing to be a great coach, and you are. It's another thing to be a great quarterback, and he is. But in order to have accomplished what the two of you did, there has to be more than that. There has to just be some connection and chemistry that worked. How did you first start to realize that you had that with him?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, that first off season back then, we were having 40 off season days, you know, of weightlifting, running, and so the off season program started earlier. You had mini camps and OTAs. Both he and Deuce was injured from the year before. In Drew's case, he was able to go through the drills but not throw, and so he was in the huddle taking a snap. I think right away you saw his leadership, and there were so many people that were new. You know, we were all, it was like an upstart, you know, a company that was just getting underway. Then we got into training camp, and he was still at that time on a very strict 20 to 30 passes a day. Pete Carmichael, who's now our offensive coordinator, Pete was with Drew in San Diego, and there was a little bit of a coincidence. I had hired Pete long before Drew was available, and Pete was the quarterback coach that season for us. So during training camp, when we were watching his progress and recovery from injury, oftentimes I'd look at Pete and say, Pete, is, you know, is he close? Is that it? You know, Pete was the only reference point to being on the field and knowing what it looked like when it was 100%. Drew will remember this. I know Pete does. I do. We played our preseason games were all on the road that year because the Superdome was still being renovated. And we played the Colts in Jackson, I believe. And in that game, I can't recall if we won or lost the game. It was, I think, the third preseason game. And he had an interception maybe or two. I can't remember. But there were two passes he threw were significantly different for him, the way his shoulder felt, the way, you know, he got on top of the ball. And I remember him after the game saying, Coach, it's going to be fine. You know, tonight something happened, and I totally felt like it was back to the way it's supposed to feel. And that was encouraging. But, you know, he's such an optimistic person. One of the great traits when you really watch him, if you tune into a game and it just goes to the offense or him in the huddle or breaking the huddle, you would never be able to tell if we were ahead 10, down 10, ahead 20, or down 20. You know, it's kind of the same. But that was a night I think he would earmark his getting over the, you know, and this was late in the preseason. And then week one, we played at Cleveland. We won that game. He made a throw at Green Bay in week two where I thought, man, there it is. And that, I think the significance of his injury in the recovery, it was still getting stronger throughout the course of that 06 season. But right away, Mike, to answer your question, there's just something, I can't put my hand on one specific thing, but he became an extension of what we were trying to do as a coaching staff. He was just such a competitor relative to how he approached everything, you know, the way he ate, the sleeping, the working out, the training, you know, it was just completely on another level, and you couldn't help but follow the players and coaches as well. You know, there is this back and forth where you feel like, hey, we've got to have the best plan in place this week. Slowly that offense began to grow, and the team began to grow in that first year. you know, he led us to the NFC Championship game. So early in that season, I think we started off 3-0, but you saw all the traits you were looking for. The only question was really the health of the shoulder, and that was answered very early in the regular season.
3-0 is exactly right. The first two on the road, and then the third game is the legendary Monday night game at home, the Steve Gleason game against Atlanta. And that was really, I think, for the rest of the world, that was the beginning of this era of Saints football. Sean Payton is with me. To me, Sean, it feels like there's really two stories here. That there's the football story, which is an incredibly important one, especially for those of us who love football. But then there is what he meant to that city. And when you take into account, again, 2005, Hurricane Katrina, the Saints didn't even play at home. The city's devastated. And now the life and the light that that brings and what he has continued to do and be and mean for people who don't live there and don't see it regularly. I mean, how would you put into words what Drew Brees over 15 years has meant to the city of New Orleans?
Yeah, I think there's so many words that come to mind. You know, the commitment, dedication to the city itself, hope, recovery, all of those things, and just the consistency he and his wife and his family have brought relative to not only his ability on the field or his work on the field, but their efforts off the field. For everyone that started in that early 06 season, new coaches, new players, nobody knew really what we were getting into. And I mean that, you knew you were coming in. In a very short period of time, we had to turn things around. You know, I can recall Parcells saying, hey, you've got, you know, a short window, or there'll be another press conference with another coach in a navy blue jacket, you know, being announced as the head coach so quickly. And for me, and I really mean, you know, that opportunity that we took a chance to some degree because of his injury, but none of this would have ever happened had we not been able to sign him at the time. And, you know, we were actually looking at the draft class. Believe it or not, Josh McCown was on a flight connecting, I want to say, in Charlotte when Drew had called that morning and said, hey, I'm coming to New Orleans. I remember we were able to get in touch with Josh. He just turned around and took the flight back and didn't connect into New Orleans. He was who we were going to go with in the early start of 06. And, you know, so many things can happen to determine, you know, when these new teams are hiring or the new coaches are coming into the league, sometimes you need some good fortune. And certainly I was blessed with that right away. And from a standpoint of the city, I mean, it's an area and a region that you're so much closer to the people. They're not all these gated neighborhoods or places to go. You really live amongst everyone. The Mannings still live in the same house that they've had for years. And I just think, you know, they have been very, very visible and huge contributors to the rebuild and to the fabric of this city.
Mike Greeny and Sean Payton is with me here, and I appreciate so much all of this time. I'd be remiss if I just didn't ask you, you know, this doesn't come as a surprise. Obviously, it was widely expected, and I'm sure you've been well aware of this for a while now. So what is the plan now? You have a really, really good football team, and you got some questions to answer a quarterback. In your mind, what is the plan going forward at the position?
Yeah, good question. So Taysom Hill's under contract with us. We're going to go out and look to sign another player. Jameis Winston is a guy that we're familiar with because we had him last year, and it was an opportunity for not only us to quickly get familiar with him, but vice versa, him to be able to see what we do offensively and how we do it. So really that's the plan for us. You know, we feel like both of those players, having been here on the roster a year ago, really for the last two or three seasons, you know, a few years back, it was Teddy Bridgewater and Taysom and Drew. And then this past season, Jameis, Taysom and Drew, we've been fortunate to have a real good room. And so I feel like, our goal right now is finding a way to get, you know, Jameis under contract, and that process all begins here and has begun.
Very exciting and a little nerve-wracking times to be a Saints and Dolphins fan, I will admit that. But hey, trust Sean Payton, trust Brian Flores, trust we're going to hear from Hawk and Crowder.
The MVP award in the NBA is a full season award.
Trust Brian Geltzeiler is going to get you up to date on everything Heat and NBA next here on 560 The Joe Radio Rewind. 560 The Joe Radio Rewind. Running back some of the best you've heard here on 560 over the past 24 hours. How you doing? I am Dan Day on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Dan Day Radio. Please give me a follow. I'll make it worth your while. Always worth your while with Hawk and Crowder weekdays from 2 to 6. Hawk is off this week. No worries. Solana's sitting in with Crowder. And right now, they're getting you up to date on the heat with Brian Geltzeiler talking about that MVP wagon and some of the moves the team might be making.
Brian Geltzeiler, he is the Hoops critic. He's a host on SiriusXM NBA Radio. You can follow him on Twitter at Hoops Critic. And Geltzy, we're calling it MVP. Jimmy Butler for MVP. Are you jumping on the MVP bandwagon with us, Geltzy?
Nope. Not quite there yet, gentlemen. Let's remember one thing about the MVP award in the NBA. The MVP award in the NBA is a full season award. So, yes, we can have guys that have tremendous stretches. We can have guys like Jimmy Butler that are carrying their team from the depths of the standings towards the top of the conference right now. However, that doesn't necessarily qualify them to win the MVP. With all that said, they're actually maybe an exception to that rule this year with the way MVP is falling. And the exception to that rule is not Jimmy Butler. The exception to that rule could very well be James Harden and what he has meant to the Brooklyn Nets since that trade, what they have done since that trade, and now the run that they have been on in the absence of Kevin Durant, with Harden leading the way. So if we're going to give it to a guy this year who certainly has not carried his team the entire year and for a period of time wasn't, in Harden's case, wasn't with the team, Butler wasn't playing for a period of time as well, but if we're going to give it to somebody that did that, right now James Harden certainly has a leg up on Jimmy Butler.
And Geltzy, speaking of Jimmy, like, does we love him down here, and we use the phrase he fills the stat sheet because he'll have steals, he'll have blocks, he'll, you know, he'll give you 8 rebounds, 22 points, you know, 6-7 assists. Like, we see him do everything for the team. But is he respected around the league like the guys, those top-tier guys, the Dame Lillards, the LeBrons, those top guys? Do people look at Jimmy that way?
Yes, and I will say this, though, Crowder, I think it's relatively new that people look at Jimmy that way. I think it's part of the chip that Jimmy has on his shoulder that he went many years in the league feeling he was that kind of player and was not viewed as that kind of player, first in Chicago and then most notably in Minnesota. In Minnesota, I mean, think about having Jimmy Butler in Minnesota. Wiggins got the most they could give Wiggins for a second contract. Towns got the most they could give Towns for a second contract. And they offered Jimmy a 4-year, $100 million deal, less than what both Wiggins and Towns were making. For Jimmy, that was a big slap in the face and a big insult because Jimmy feels as though he is that kind of top-tier player. And I think when he's gotten to Miami here, he's used that as motivation to be that kind of guy. And he knew he had the right organization and the right franchise and the word we use all the time that applies to the Heat, the right culture to be able to flex his muscles in that organization in the way that he's comfortable doing to try to lift other guys. And let's face it, it's worked out great. But I think he is respected there. I think but what he did last season in willing the Miami Heat to an NBA final and to taking the Lakers and LeBron James and Anthony Davis to 6 games is what put him in that category. And listen, I know that he would have liked to have been involved in the All-Star game this year and gotten that notoriety. But again, he didn't play a lot early in the year, and that just wasn't going to happen. But nonetheless, Butler is considered a top-tier player in the category with the guys that I mentioned.
Geltzy, the Heat now, I think since the last time we talked to you, are playing obviously much better. Number 4 in the Eastern Conference. They've won 14 out of their last 18. There was plenty of talk about the Heat's bubble run being a fluke. And I know you told us several times, Geltzy, you thought that was nonsense, that there's no such thing as a fluke when a team gets to the NBA Finals. But those talks were amplified when the Heat were out of the playoff picture. That's not something we're hearing anymore, right? Like, now that the team is healthy, Jimmy Butler is winning the fourth quarter again, like, those talks, that's not something we hear anymore about the Miami Heat.
So, Anna, it was silly then. It's even sillier now. And this is because when you want to talk about a team being a fluke, did the Heat, like, did I miss something, you know, this past fall where the Heat scraped by the Eastern Conference by the skin of their teeth? Because it didn't look like that to me. What it looked like to me was a team that dominated the conference and lost 3 games. It went 12-3 against the best the Eastern Conference had to offer to get to an NBA final. There's nothing fluky about that. And listen, I will say this about this year's team. it's lesser for not having Jay Crowder on it. Jay Crowder was a very big part of what they did, and the attempts they've made to replace him have failed miserably. Harkless was a guy I liked that they brought in. He's been hurt a bunch and hasn't done much. Avery Bradley is a guy that he's on the floor. I like him, but once again, it rears its ugly head, him and injuries, not being on the floor. So the Heat definitely are lesser for not having Crowder, and I do think they're going to make some kind of deal at the deadline here to try to shore this up. They have the expiring deals to be able to get something done. But nonetheless, you know, the Heat belong being a top 14 in the conference, and I think where you see them right now is kind of where they're going to be. Now, do I think they can ascend to number one in the conference and potentially catch Philadelphia, or I think Brooklyn's eventually, it's a matter of time before Brooklyn overtakes Philadelphia for number one in the conference. I don't think they're going to be that, but they certainly belong in with the upper echelon teams of the conference as opposed to the second tier teams. That's absolutely obvious. And last year was in no way, shape, or form any kind of fluke. I mean, the bubble environment played well to Miami's strengths, but you don't do what they did in the dominant fashion. They did it and be a fluke.
And Gelty, to your point, like they won the East last year. So I don't know if this question's crazy, but are they too small? Like teams can beat them up. It seems like if they just want to go out and whoop their ass, it seems like they don't really have that size. Kelly Olynyk's not really a center. Myers Leonard, we won't even get into his story, but he's probably gone anyway. Are the Heat big enough?
Yeah, and listen, Myers Leonard was out for the year anyway, and I'll tell you this about Myers Leonard. Not only will you not see him ever play a game again for the Miami Heat, I don't know that you'll ever see him play in the NBA again. Because it's, you know, just as an aside, you know, comments of that nature and the way that it was said and then the general casualness of how it was said would make, you know, Myers Leonard's not good enough to overcome that. So I don't know that we'll ever see him playing a league again. But Crowder, there's not a stupid question at all. That's a great question. Because the reality is where the Heat have a problem coming into this year's Eastern Conference playoffs in lack of lineup versatility, where they really can't go big with enough quality players. And it's funny, people think I'm crazy when I keep saying this, but I think Miami has a chance to maybe steal Andre Drummond. And I think if they did that, and Bam would spend some time at four, and you could play the two of them together. They're certainly both athletic enough to switch onto other guys' perimeter players. Miami doesn't need to switch all the time. That's the other part of this. They are well-versed in playing some health and recover defense, if that's what it requires. You can certainly build zones around Bam and Andre Drummond. Miami can do it a lot of different ways defensively, and they're comfortable playing zones. I would tell you this, Drummond in a contract year, if they can get him on the cheap, and all you're hearing about Drummond is buyout talk. Somebody's going to make a deal for Andre Drummond, and you're not going to have to give a lot to do it. But it's at a point where the Cavs are going to have to save face and get something for him. That's a wonderful player for the Miami Heat because they can now have that versatility to play big and play small. Because here's one thing I will tell you, and this is the only thing that scares me for the Brooklyn Nets in going to an NBA final, and it applies to the Heat as well, and to a lesser extent it applies to the Bucks. But you're going to have to go through Joel Embiid. And nobody's going to stop Joel Embiid. You're not going to shut him down. And he very well will come out, and he'll light you up for 26, 28, 30, 32. But what you can have Joel Embiid do to you is light you up for 40 and 42 and put those kinds of numbers up against him. You have to have a big body that can at least make life a little bit difficult for him in some spots. Listen, Embiid's owned Drummond throughout both of their careers matchup-wise, but Drummond is physically, he has the physical makeup to make things a little bit tougher on Joel Embiid. And to me, if the Heat could do something to get him, and again, because of the expiring deals, because Leonard's got a team option for next year, so for all intents and purposes, that's an expiring deal. There's a small partial guarantee on Iguodala next year. That's, for all intents and purposes, an expiring deal. Olynyk is an expiring deal. They can take back the salary and figure it out and probably get it done for a second-round pick or 2 second-round picks and not have to take anything from their treasure chest of assets. So I don't think it's a very, very good question, Crowder. And to me, I would keep an eye on Miami and Drummond. I think Drummond's a very interesting player for the Heat.
The Heat certainly do look like they are coming around. Let's go Heat. Let's go Heat. Let's go Heat. Just keep winning, baby. Keep winning. Keep Jimmy Butler on the court, too. I'm on that Jim VP wagon. Jim V. Wouldn't that be awesome if it wasn't COVID and we could fill up the American Airlines Arena and start chanting, Jim VP. Let's relive some of the glory from that win over Orlando the other night. This is what I like to call one hot minute.
Let's get down to business.
Tatter, he'll drive, kick it back out. Kelly left wide open, a long three. Got it, they'll go. Kelly Olynyk, second tray of the evening. The Magic back with a Duncan Robinson, another three. Three threes in a row by Miami. Two from Robinson, one from Tatter. Dragic throws it back up top to Robinson, now to Butler. Butler, he'll size up the big man, go up with a layup, and got it to go. Jimmy Butler got right around Vucevic. He's now got 19.
Let's get down.
Randall for the Magic front court. DeRoss knocked out of his hands. Free one. Jimmy Butler down the floor. Two-hand jam. Miami's back on top by one. 90-89. Butler now with 25.
So let's get down. Let's get down to business.
Out to Kelly. Up top. Tatter straight on for three. Got it to go. Tatter gives Miami a four-point lead with 2:18 left to go. Back up top, deflected. Jimmy Butler on the steal. Butler goes in, layup, and got it to go with 4 seconds left. And the Heat leading now 102-97. Some good defense by Miami. And Jimmy Butler's fifth steal of the ball game gives Miami a five-point lead with 4:03 left to go. The final score, Miami 102 and Orlando 97.
Yeah, let's get down to business. I'm getting down to business. I'm going to quickly, hopefully, and inexpensively get my taxes done. Then I'm watching that Knicks-Nets game with my neighbors, drinking some Yingling beer, and just enjoying life. It's Monday. Life is short. What are you going to do? I'm going to be back tomorrow, though. It's not going to get too crazy, I hope. So I can be here with you right here, 6 o'clock, for 560 The Joe Radio Rewind. Later, slug.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games, or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.